Welcome to another edition of the Truth Hurts program. Let's get started. It's the gift that keeps on giving. I couldn't resist. I have to do this. I'm throwing this ahead of today's segment. In Brandon High School, I wonder if the cheerleaders are yelling, "Let's go, Brandon." Now, there are many Brandon High Schools in the United States of America. There are several Brandon High Schools that I personally have knowledge of in Florida, Mississippi, Minnesota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and Missouri. All of those, I wonder if they're getting in trouble for shouting, "Let's go, Brandon." My buddy Jason sent me this comparison of Kyle Rittenhouse to Alec Baldwin. Kyle Rittenhouse, no prior trouble. In 2020, he was chased by a violent gang. He wounded one, killed one, both trying to inflict deadly force upon him. In self-defense, he was acting when he shot them. He goes to prison. Alec Baldwin, however, in 1995, punched a photographer, removed from a plane for creating a disturbance in 2011. 2012, he punched a photographer. 2013, he roughed up a photographer. In 2013, he yelled gay slurs. 2014, he was arrested for disorderly conduct. 2018, he was arrested, punched a man on the street, not a photographer. And in 2021, shot and killed an innocent female bystander who happened to be directing a movie and injured another. And he gets no charges at all. Maybe it's because he's a big-time leftist. That would be my thought. And then finally, this week on House Hunters, he's an illegal immigrant who swam across the Rio Grande. She's an illegal immigrant who snuck in the bottom of a plane. Now they're on House Hunters with a $900,000 budget because they're both claiming that the little bambinos that were held at the border were their children and they are sad on the inside of their bodies. All right, let's get started with today's program, shall we? Hi, and welcome back to another edition of the Truth Hurts program, coming to you from Studio 63 in Bayou Country. I'm Steve Z, and I'm taking a look at the headlines and giving you my take on the lies of the left, the pandering of the progressives, and of course the double standard issued by our wonderful media that always seems to slant in the favor of Democrats and far, far against anyone that has a conservative mindset. Newsweek reported, gas industry group warns Biden's climate plan means higher energy prices. Duh! Gosh, could we have found anything more inane to write? But let's delve into this article. It says a group representing independent fossil fuel exploration and production companies has warned that new regulations proposed to curb methane emissions could cause massive job losses and increase Americans' energy costs substantially. A comment by the American Exploration and Production Council, AXPC, which represents the country's major independent natural oil and gas exploration and production companies, followed President Joe Biden's declaration of war against the heat-trapping gas on Tuesday. At the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow on Tuesday, in between midday naps, gropey Joe Biden announced the global methane pledge to cut international methane emissions by 30%. From the 2020 levels by the end of the decade. He outlined U.S. domestic policies to cut emissions of the gas across the U.S. Among the proposals in the Environmental Protection Agency rule would be to plug methane gas leaks, more frequent leak monitoring, and the capture of natural gas found alongside of oil when they're drilling. If you've ever been near a drilling rig, you don't just drill straight down and find only oil. Sometimes you find methane. Sometimes you find other off-gases. Energy industry groups have largely reserved immediate judgment to curb methane, which is supposedly 84 times more potent than carbon. But AXPC CEO Ann Bradbury said the methane regulations proposed today by gropey Joe Biden and the EPA will likely result in significant new costs associated with compliance, and the new methane tax being proposed in the reconciliation bill, on top of those regulatory costs being imposed on the industry through compliance with these new rules, will be an additional and punitive tax on the industry. This means, of course, higher prices for you and for me at the pump. I think if gropey Joe Biden were forced to live as a normal American with a real job that paid him 60, 70 grand a year and have to go out to the pump and pump his own fuel, he would crap his pants. Wait, what? He already did crap his pants. But I think that was a function of old age and the loss of his bodily functions along with his mental faculties. Energy industry groups have complained about the prospect of these fees being imposed on methane emissions from natural gas and petroleum production systems and related processes. This methane tax will disadvantage American producers, increase America's energy costs, cause about 90,000 jobs lost across the country, and an additional $9 billion will be lost from our country's GDP, and it will, of course, further drive us away from energy independence and back into dependency on gropey Joe Biden's buddies over there in Sandland. Just another way to find a way to tax industry, you know, big corporations, and cost you and I many more dimes at the pump per gallon. The Supreme Court debates a balance between public safety and self-defense in the current New York gun rights case, according to the Washington Post. The Supreme Court today began to review a challenge to New York State's gun restrictions, and it's a case with broad implications for other states that restrict the ability to carry loaded, concealed firearms in public places. And this is the first major Second Amendment case before the high court in more than a decade. Currently, gun owners in New York need a special license from local authorities to carry firearms outside of the home, and they must show proper cause needing to do so. Seven other liberal states, California, Delaware, Hawaii, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, all have similar laws which infringe upon the right to keep and bear arms in direct violation of the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. Several of the justices asked New York's lawyer about limiting the right to carry firearms for self-defense in dangerous neighborhoods or while jogging at night. Other justices expressed concern about the proliferation of guns in highly populated areas. Justices also pressed the gun owner's lawyer about whether state lawmakers could limit the carry of firearms on places like college campuses, football stadiums, and bars. Justice Stephen Breyer warned the possibility of gun-related chaos. Well, you need to know these things. It's been 13 years since the conservative court majority on a 5-4 vote declared an individual right to gun ownership in the landmark case District of Columbia versus Heller. An even more conservative court agreed to hear the dispute, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, after multiple justices said the court needs to more clearly define the rights first acknowledged back in 2008. It's funny. The Amendment number 2, the Second Amendment, has been in the Constitution since the Bill of Rights was adopted. Gun owners Robert Nash and Brandon Koch say New York's law is at odds with the Second Amendment by giving the government officials too much discretion. The men do have licenses to carry firearms for hunting and target practices, but authorities denied their request for unrestricted licenses, saying they fail to show a special need for self-protection. Nash and Koch are joined in their suit by the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, an affiliate of the National Rifle Association. New York officials have warned that striking down the law could jeopardize other government gun restrictions that they claim is intended to safeguard subways, airports, houses of worships, bars, and other places. In closing out 2 hours of arguments, the lawyers for the gun owners told the justices that New York cannot put a cap on the number of firearms or deprive a typical New Yorker of their right to carry for self-defense just because they live in a highly populated area. Seven of the nation's 10 largest cities, according to attorney Paul Clement, do not impose restrictions similar to those in New York on carrying concealed handguns in public places. He said, "The only difference you really see is people who have a handgun for self-defense end up with a better outcome. They're not shot, they're not made victims." The history and text of the Second Amendment, he concluded, means that individuals get to make their decision about whether or not they want to carry a firearm outside the home for self-defense. Chief Justice Roberts asks why gun owners must justify exercising their Second Amendment right. He pointed out that constitutional rights do not have to be justified, just as the Second Amendment's right to bear arms. He said, quote, "The Constitution gives you that right. And if someone's going to take it away from you, they have to justify it." Brian Fletcher is the principal deputy solicitor general arguing in support of the New York law, and he said the whole question is whether the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms confers that right to have a pistol with you for self-defense, even absent the showing of demonstrating a need, unquote. Roberts responded, I'm not sure that's right. I mean, regardless of what the right is, it would be surprising to have it depend upon a permit system. You can say that the right is limited in the particular way, such as the First Amendment rights are limited, but the idea that you need a license to exercise a right, I think, is unusual in the context of the Bill of Rights. Fletcher then responded, the laws of which New York is one but by no means many the only example that began to become more prevalent in the 20th century said, we're going to make that determination of need ex ante. We're going to require the showing of good cause, and New York has done that for a century. Justice Amy Coney Barrett then said, is that rightly decided? She asked Underwood if she thinks the landmark Heller case was properly decided in 2008. I think there's a lot of support historically and otherwise for it, so I'm quite content to treat it as rightly undecided, Underwood said. I think there was an argument on the other side too, but that's true about most of the difficult questions that become before the court. Barrett asked if the court is bound by the way it characterized history in that opinion. Mr. Clement has pointed out that in some respects, the way we treated, say, the Statute of Northampton is different from the way that you argue that we should interpret, you know, the statutes in the colonies. You argue that we should understand those in some other cases differently than we did in Heller. Are we actually free to do that? Underwood says yes, because the Heller decision made clear that it was not deciding anything other than the right to keep arms in the home. In the course of arriving at that decision, the court necessarily said a lot of other things that led to the decision, but I don't think they're controlling, Underwood said. I think the opinion itself says we're not trying to do a full exegesis of the whole Second Amendment right. Justice Samuel Alito raised the issue of everyday self-defense on the streets of New York. He said, could I explore that what that means for ordinary law-abiding citizens who feel they need to carry a firearm for self-defense? He raised the issue of people who work late in Manhattan, may have to walk through high crime areas to get home and are scared to death. They do not get licenses, is that right? That is in general right, Barbara Underwood said, if there's nothing particular to them. How is that consistent, Alito responded, with the core right to self-defense, which is protected by the Second Amendment? Underwood answered, because the core right to self-defense doesn't, as this court said, doesn't allow for all to be armed for possible confrontations in all places. Alito asked, there are a lot of armed people on the streets of New York and in the subways late at night right now, aren't there? All these people with illegal guns, they're on the subway, they're walking around the streets, but the ordinary hard-working law-abiding people I mentioned, no, they can't be armed. Underwood responded, the idea of proliferating arms on the subway is precisely, I think, what terrifies a great many people. The other point is that proliferating guns in a populated area where there is a law enforcement jeopardizes law enforcement because when they come, they now can't tell who's shooting and then the shooting proliferates and accelerates. And in the end, that's why there's a substantial law enforcement interest in not having widespread carrying of guns on the subway. I'm going to stop for just a moment. This idiot, Underwood, thinks it's perfectly okay for criminals to illegally carry guns on subways, but it is not okay for law-abiding citizens to carry guns on subways for their own self-protection. Do you not see how totally ass-backwards this is? It's right out of the Democrat handbook. Arm the illegals, disarm the law-abiding. At 1127, Kavanaugh was concerned about the discretionary aspects of New York's gun law. Several times, Kavanaugh expressed concerns about the broad discretion given to government officials to determine which New York residents qualify for licenses to carry guns in public places. He asked the state's lawyer why it was not sufficient for applicants to show, for instance, that they live in a high-crime neighborhood or that they go jogging at night. He said, that's the real concern, isn't it, with any constitutional right. If it's the discretion of an individual officer, that seems inconsistent. He then asked the state's lawyer whether there was any evidence of higher crime rates in other states that permit residents to carry guns outside the home without presenting specific justification. Underwood said such a system would lead to a higher number of firearms in the state, including in highly populated areas, and a greater risk that mistakes will be made and fights will break out. Kavanaugh asked for more evidence. He said, it seems like before you impose restrictions on an individual citizen and infringe constitutional rights based on a theory, you should have to show that those other states have a lot more accidents, crime, and I don't see any real evidence of that. The bottom line, folks, is this one is going to go on for quite some time, but I think that the Constitution is the overarching law of our land and should not be so restricted. I think the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is the actual meaning of the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And any infringement, because they think it's going to be safer, any infringement that doesn't take guns out of the hands of criminals, but takes guns out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, is an undue infringement. And that should be stricken from the record. The law should go away. People should have the right, as the Constitution says, to keep and bear arms for their own protection. If the Virginia governor election was indeed the first shot of the 2022 midterm elections, as Camel Toe Harris said it would be, as the results of Virginia and New York go, so will go the 2022 midterms, and she was right. For the first time in more than a decade, Virginia, that has been comfortably Democratic in last year's presidential election, will now have a Republican governor. Glenn Youngkin is a businessman making his first run for elected office, and he defeated a former governor and veteran political fundraiser in Terry McAuliffe, and he did so with very few political coattails. Remember, he didn't grab Donald Trump to run alongside him. He did this pretty much on his own. Republican candidates also won the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor races. The Lieutenant Governor race was the first African-American woman, and she posed holding an AR-15 because she understands the right to keep and bear arms. This is just one election in one state, although a red state now, solidly in Democratic New Jersey, looks like it's going to also go the way of the Republicans. I'm telling you, my friends, Camel Toe Harris actually said something right. As goes Virginia and New Jersey, so will the rest of the country go. It's been only 10 months that Gropey Joe has been in office. Only 10 months of him destroying the nation. And people are now wisely expressing their buyer's remorse at the polls. And with the tax and spend and tax again processes of the Democrat Party, it looks like Republicans might sail to a massive takeover of Congress, both the House and the Senate, in the midterm elections. Oh, speaking of Democrats in Congress, Joe Manchin has doubled down as the House has now put paid leave back on the spending bill. So now he's saying, I'm not playing ball with you. Good for you, Joe Manchin. Good for you. I spoke about some weird parents not wanting their children to be gendered. Let them make their own decision. Look into their own diapers and say, but I have a penis, but I want to be a girl. Or I have a vagina and I want to be a boy. How ridiculous is that? The Daily Mail published, Dad edits his daughter's Disney books to remove what he calls gender stereotypes. Here's a dad who probably needs to have his child taken away from him. Just saying. He's going strong and viral on TikTok for changing his daughter's Disney books to remove all gender stereotypes in the hopes of encouraging his child to, quote, not settle for society's sexist standards, unquote. The Minnesota-based father put his graphic editing skills to use by transforming Disney storybooks to alter plot lines, and he's documented the process in an entire TikTok viral video series. He says, I can fix this. And he looks like an effeminate guy. One book is shown with an African-American, dark-skinned woman holding a spoonful of pie to a lighter-skinned African-American gentleman in a vest and a shirt and tie with a hat on his head. And that page of the book says, what does Tiana love more than baking? Sharing her treats with Prince Naveen. So now the dad has taken out some of that. And it just says, what does Tiana love more than baking? Sharing her treats. How special. One of the slides where Prince Charming is dancing with Snow White reads, and finds her Prince Charming, is now edited to say something like, goes to the dance and has a good time. He edited Cinderella dancing with Prince Charming and now has a woman dancing with Cinderella. and it says, Cinderella goes to the ball and finds her true love as she looks glossy-eyed into a female. Me, 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 said the brothers in one of the Disney books. Now it says, sorry, boys, if you want a cookie, clean up the kitchen first. Rapunzel starts to think about what she's going to do in the future as she points to pie contest as she stands in front of a steed and a prince. The new book now says, Rapunzel starts to think about what she's going to do, and Rapunzel dreams big. They change the pie eating contest banner to now have a picture of Harvard University on it. Rapunzel's pie is the best. She wins a blue ribbon, and she wins her boyfriend's approval. Now it says, the prince bakes Rapunzel a pie because she's tops in her class. Ariel, the mermaid, changes her body and leaves her friends and family, and now she's baking, one of these video sheets says. But it's now changed to say instead of baking, Ariel orders a pizza. He cuts and pastes pictures out of one book into another and has totally destroyed what Disney thought for his kids. I hope the Disney company takes this as some type of infringement on their copyrights for having the same characters in there. I hope Disney sues this dad, just like they would sue you or I if for some reason we started bastardizing Disney comics to be supportive of, let's say, I don't know, Donald Trump. This is the Truth Hurts program. And just as you start seeing mandates for masking and restrictions on public gatherings easing, people finally starting to get back to the stores to do some shopping, traveling, vacationing, the following is likely to become President Gropey Joe Biden's most hotly contested COVID policy. That's right. He is implementing a sweeping nationwide safety standard for the American workplace that will demand large businesses require to get the vaccine or test regularly. Now, this is not old news, but ABC News has just put out vaccine or test. Biden advances sweeping new mandates for the private sector. A temporary emergency rule will apply to every single U.S. private business that employs 100 workers or more, from grocery clerks to meat packing plant employees to truck driving companies. It will impact over 80 million Americans. And it would be the first time that Washington, D.C. has set a federal standard that regards a respiratory virus now as an occupational hazard outside of the healthcare sector. It's essentially putting COVID in the same category as asbestos or dangerous machinery. In other words, government overreach at its horrible worst. Details will be expected to be released as early as tomorrow, Thursday, on the rule as drafted by the Labor Department's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, better known as OSHA. Jordan Barab is a longtime top official during the agency during the Obama-Biden administration, and he said it's the biggest thing OSHA has ever done in terms of the number of workers that it will cover. They're making it sound like they're protecting you. All they're doing is restricting you. Union groups, industry groups say they have yet to see a draft of this new rule. Among the most pressing questions is when employers would have to comply. Republicans warn that mandates ahead of the holidays will definitely exacerbate the nation's worker shortage and contribute to empty shelves Joe's empty shelves, Joe. It's unclear how long his temporary standard would be in place, and if it would also apply to short-term gig workers like freelancers, Uber drivers, smaller franchisees that are part of nationwide chains, you know, like small restaurants, gyms, or the small driving companies that own 20 or 30 vans delivering your Amazon packages. How employers will be expected to enforce the standard is another question. We have no idea what this is going to entail. They don't know what they're looking at. It's like a black box. Federal contractors have until November 22nd to become fully vaccinated. Government workers till December 8th. Testing is not an option. And Congress has exempted itself and all of its workers from the vaccine mandate. Imagine that. Labor Department spokesperson in the White House declined to discuss specifics of the rule ahead of its release. In other words, you have to wait until we put it out there for you to know what's in it. It's a typical Democrat strategy. And it's unlikely that it's going to have any positive effect on the Wuhan, China kung fu flu. It's just another grab, folks, another grab at your freedom. It's terrible, terrible, terrible business. And even worse, it's terrible politics in general. Hope springs eternal. At least that's what many New Orleans Saints fans are hoping after their new starting quarterback, Jameis Winston, went out after a horse tackle collar, which resulted in a season-ending injury to Jameis Winston, an ACL major tear, leaving a man named Simeon to run the offense for the Saints. They did end up beating Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks in the weekend game. The heir apparent to Jameis Winston, of course, is Taysom Hill, who is out indefinitely with a concussion. Former retired New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, first round, first pick Hall of Famer for sure, has been tugging on the heartstrings of New Orleans Saints fans since Jameis Winston went out. He sent a cryptic tweet out on Tuesday that said, "Have you heard who's showing up again to the big game?" Saints fans replied in droves, still heartbroken by the season-ending injury to Brees' replacement, Jameis Winston, with that torn ACL. Many responded, "We hope it's you, Drew. We play Sunday at 1 p.m. The meaning behind the tweet remains a mystery, and a return from retirement does seem highly unlikely. After all, Brees is now a television sports announcer, and I don't know what contractual obligations or any other implications of his contract to do sports announcing for a major network might have to do with him also playing the game. I don't think it's likely that he will be jumping out of retirement to lead the Saints this coming weekend. But regardless, the Houdat Nation is holding out hope that the tweet means Brees will suit up Sunday as the Saints take on their rival Atlanta Falcons. I think the Super Bowl, being referred to as the big game, means the tweet is likely some sort of advertisement or marketing campaign that Drew Brees and his handlers have concocted. Head coach Sean Payton says he's happy with the quarterbacks on the roster. Saints fans were pleasantly surprised by Trevor Siemian's performance following that horse collar takedown that ruined Winston's season and didn't even regard a flag. This is the Truth Hurts program. Who dat? And finally today, a 1,200-year-old dated Native American canoe was found in a Wisconsin lake, and they are going to preserve it. It's known as a dugout canoe, a water vessel built from a hollowed-out tree. It was found in Lake Mendota. It was pulled from the depth of around 30 feet with the assistance of the Dane County Sheriff's Office. Historians believe the canoe was built by ancestors of the Ho-Chunk peoples, one of the First Nations of Wisconsin, and it simply refers to this boat as a dugout. The museum there in Minnesota says they will be pushing hard to preserve this waterborne fossil and possibly display it in a Native American museum. That's beautiful, man. I'm glad to see that they're not just chopping it up for firewood or doing something stupid like that. By the way, remember John Schnatter, the founder of Papa John's Pizza, who was exiled by the company because someone said he said bad things about black people? And then they put Shaquille O'Neal as their spokesperson, as if he isn't spokesperson enough for enough other businesses already. John Schnatter says he has had over 800 pizzas in the last 18 months. He says he continues his previous 40 pies in 30 days marathon. He said some were burnt, some were undercooked. He says over 800 pizzas in all. He's not consuming the whole pizza, but sampling them, a kind of anecdotal quality assurance process, he says, currently is returning lackluster results. This isn't the first time John Schnatter has criticized the company since he left in 2018, a conference call where he allegedly used the word, well, the N-word. God, I wouldn't want to say that word, heaven forbid. But we all know if you say N-word, it means whatever the N-word stands for. So you're still saying the word. He says, I've had 40 pizzas in 30 days, and it's not the same pizza. It's not the same product. It just doesn't taste as good. Well, that's because the corporation had to cut corners. They had to pay him some kind of a severance package. And now they have to hire someone like Shaquille O'Neal It's got to be costing them unbelievable amounts of money. Papa John's was at one time the official pizza of the NFL. It was a $34 million expense for the company, which include major advertising partnerships with the NFL. John Schnatter resigned as the company's CEO, but remained the chairman of the board. And soon after that, the NFL parted ways. Pizza Hut picked up the NFL gig a few weeks later. In July of 2018, on a conference call with a PR firm, John Schnatter doubled down on his criticisms of players protesting and kneeling before he used, supposedly, a racial slur. He said they're all beating their wives up. They're all on steroids or pot, and now Commissioner Goodell is going to let them protest. What bothers me is Colonel Sanders called blacks, and he used the word for the N-word. He says, I'm like, I never used that word. He never called a N-word person the N-word. He simply said Colonel Sanders called blacks the N-words. He never said anything bad, but they stole the company, and now they've destroyed the company, and the day of reckoning will come. He says he was forced to resign. The company's product has degraded since his departure. I personally have not had a Papa John's pizza since that time. Don't plan on ever having one again, to be honest with you. That's all the time we have for this edition of the Truth Hurts program. Go out there and make it a great day, everybody. And remember, you have the right to support businesses that fit your ideology and your conservative mindset. It doesn't make you a racist if you choose not to pander to a race-baiting company. Have a great day. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z. Opinions expressed are free speech protected under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. We apologize if you were offended, but we retract nothing. Background music by Jason Shaw and Audionautics.